Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So this rhabdomyolysis is pretty fucking serious. I mean, you keep persisting through it, going back to buds with fucking rhabdo, which is a good way to get renal failure and die, right?
Let's go.
Welcome to Citizen. We've got a special guest today, Jeff Gum, former Navy SEAL and entrepreneur. How's it going?
Going awesome.
Yeah, good to hear that. If anybody wants to pause and go look some of this shit up before they continue listening to the rest of the interview, it's Jeff and then Gum, like the chewing gum. And you're the founder of Sunga Life, which is not surprising to that a Navy SEAL started a clothing company with the shortest possible shorts humanly allowed, or legally allowed, rather. So go look that up, and then check out Force Blue, which you've heard about before from Rudy Reyes, repairing coral and stuff like that. But let's get into it. So where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Pennsylvania, actually on a dairy farm, and lived there till I was 18. My family is still there, and then went to school in Florida after that at UCF.
Go Knights. Word? Yeah, so you're a national champion then, huh?
Exactly. yeah, we didn't lose our conference like Alabama that year.
What kind of cows? Holstein or?
Dairy. Black and white ones.
What the fuck are those? Those are Jersey. Yeah, those are Jersey cows, I think.
Okay.
I think Holstein and Brown. I don't remember. Fuck, what do I know? So let's talk about growing up. You grew up on a farm, I guess it's a dairy farm, or just a dairy. How do you say it?
Yeah, it was the dairy farm. It was really nice, kind of a small farm, 100 acres. We had a pond in the backyard that my grandpa kind of dug out and created from natural springs, and he used that to irrigate the entire farm. He ended up being master farmer of Pennsylvania. He had the highest like crop yield for the size. And then my dad bought that from my grandpa, and everything was amazing. I had a pony named Rocky, who was one of my best friends, and a bunch of golden retrievers that my mom bred. But my father ended up being killed when I was 8 in a car accident. Mm-hmm. He was running errands and picking up farm equipment, and a tractor trailer came across the highway and hit him in the door head on. And so a lot of big changes after that. They started sold off all the cows and the farm equipment. Everything was auctioned, and we had a lot of family who really helped support my mom and everything through all that. My grandparents lived just up the street. But yeah, everything was very different after that.
You got brothers and sisters? Like how big was the family?
So I was the oldest. I was 8 and my sister was 5. My brother was 2 at the time. Mm-hmm.
That's tough. Yeah. It's good that you had family and friends around, I suppose, because that could have gone pretty bad.
Yeah. 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 They all really supported. I was really close to my grandparents who lived right there, and my mom's parents lived in New Jersey, not too far, and they came out and supported a lot as well, just to help watch us and everything. Mm-hmm. And my mom ended up meeting another really great guy about maybe a year and a half later or so, who was actually a childhood friend of my father's. And he took me to a basketball game maybe like a year and a half later, and I was like, mommy's really great. And then maybe another year and a half after that, they got married.
Oh, wow. That's cool. Well, look, all worked out, I guess. What was high school like then? The reason I ask is because, you know, you're in that age group where 9/11 would have had an impact on whether or not you joined the military. I don't know that that's not a thing anymore, really. People join for one reason or another, but most people from our general age group, that was a big part of it. So how old were you when that happened?
Yeah, I was 17. I was sitting in it was like an AP literature class, and all of a sudden, yeah, that happened, and basically class stopped for the day. We all kind of had discussions about it. I had already wanted to be a SEAL since I was 16, mainly for the challenge and to learn all the really badass stuff about being a SEAL, skydiving, shooting guns, blowing stuff up, fighting. But then it kind of went for the whole reason to go hunt the most evil people in the world and make sure 9/11 doesn't happen again.
Sure, yeah.
Like more like unselfish reasons. Mm.
What was it that as a teenager, why the SEALs? Why not something else? Was it Charlie Sheen?
Yeah, so I actually tore my ACL when I was 16. Mm-hmm. And was just stuck in a brace. And I started looking for the hardest thing to do, challenge myself, because I realized I couldn't be sitting. I'm like, all of a sudden, for the first time in my life, I'm stuck in a brace, not able to play four sports and work out lifting. And I was like, all right, I can't go do a normal job. I need the biggest challenge in order to be fulfilled. And I was like, oh, I could do Hell Week. So that's what really kind of enticed me. I wanted to do Hell Week and challenge myself and do these really awesome things, scuba diving, you get the water as well. And I wasn't great in the water yet. I kind of want to eliminate that weakness too.
Mm. Yeah, that's I think that's, and you can speak to this because I've heard this from other SEALs before. There's a lot of people don't go to BUDS because they're worried about being in the water, but a lot of people go to BUDS without any water skills at all, and you just kind of fucking sink or swim, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's why the attrition rate is really high as well. I wasn't great in the water yet. I was pretty solid at everything else. But then I actually trained with an Army Ranger who was had his own scuba company, Ranger Rick Lorimore. Mm-hmm. He ended up becoming the president of NAWI later on. Yeah. We reconnected. But he would take me at the pool at YMCA and like tie me up and do all these other things. And then I had another really great mentor, Mike Gecko, who was a pretty infamous first phase instructor. He actually instructed all the guys who put me through SEAL training. And I kind of learned drown proofing and a lot of the basics from him. And he connected me with collegiate swimmers who one of them became one of my best friends. And we went through BUDS together, but I would just train a lot of swimming with him. I really want to eliminate any weaknesses that I had before I got there.
What, just out of curiosity, what did the YMCA staff have to say about you getting tied up and thrown into the fucking deep into the pool?
I think Rick had been going there for a while and training people, and nobody really messed with us. It was the same YMCA where kind of the NSW mentorees would come through and do a bunch of swimming. And yeah, nobody really messed with us at all. It was good.
Yeah, that is good. So this is, did you go to school first or did you go to the military first?
So both. I went to UCF first, and I did my MBA at UCLA after.
Oh, I see. So you had the ability to become an officer, but chose to enlist instead. I did the same thing, by the way, in the 82nd Awesome. Airborne. But because I didn't, and maybe it's different for SEALs. I don't actually know that much, but in the infantry, it's like if you're an officer, you may get to do a little fighting as a first lieutenant. Or a second lieutenant, rather, and then you might get to do a little bit more as a captain unless you go into SOF, but that's it. That's the end of it for you. So that seemed like a dumb idea to me. I didn't want to do fucking paperwork.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. So, you know, I was going through all these things. I was looking at the Naval Academy. I was like, oh, I could, you know, be a SEAL because I thought I should do college first. That's what, you know, you're always kind of told. And then I was like, oh, I found out about ROTC. I'm like, maybe I'll do ROTC. Then I was like, oh, going to college in Florida would be amazing. You know, being in a small town, Pennsylvania, there's like pool parties and stuff. So I was checking out University of Florida in Miami, and I talked to my cousins who are really successful entrepreneurs, and they had gone to UCF. I went down, visited them, loved the school, but they didn't have Navy ROTC. They only had Army. So I actually did Army ROTC, did Ranger Challenge a couple years. I went to airborne school. I get to airborne school, and all my best friends there had a just finished buds. And I was like, you know what? And they had kind of longer hair and sideburns, and they weren't marching. And I just kind of fit in great with them. And so
Yeah, long hair
I,
don't care, right? That's the fucking motto.
well, yeah, one of them. And so, yeah, decided Buds was going to be the right route. And they also told me to enlist. So I kind of got out of ROTC, said I'd pay it back when I graduated, enlisting in the Navy, took care of the scholarship. And then that way I could be a sniper, breacher, heavy machine gunner, do all the really cool parts of being a SEAL. And yeah, got to go do all that.
Yeah, you were a West Coast guy, right?
I was, yeah. So going to Buds in San Diego, I really fell in love with it, and had yeah, he got really close with the Gracie family out there too, with jujitsu and everything, and just was like, all right, I definitely want to stay in California. I think it was before California really. I mean, San Diego is still okay, but California in general really went downhill since then.
You don't say.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit, and then we'll get back into some of the military stuff. You're in that generation like me, that experienced 9/11, and also experienced the, I guess, non-internet, non-social media culture, right? Where I guess mobile phones became pretty popular in the late 90s to early 2000s, but social media was more like middle 2000s. And then,
And it was a lot different too. It was like MySpace and Facebook. People weren't on it scrolling all day long. They might, you know, check it out here and there. But I would go, you know, probably weeks at a time without even looking at it, you know, checking out my MySpace. It
Well,
wasn't
I just wanted to see what Tom was up to mostly, but how do you like you? So you went through this. You were part of that generation. What did you see culture-wise, how it changed over that time period, and if there was any, like the you were in NSW, so it may not be reflective of the greater Navy, larger Navy, or larger DoD or anything, but did you see first culture change in general society, and then was there a culture change in the Navy as well as this started to progress? I'm just curious.
A huge change in society. People were not, you know, hooked to their phones the same way, but people could be hooked to other things. It could be newspapers or whatever, but it's not quite as engaging and pulling people in. And then men had to go. I mean, when I was in college, we went out almost every night, you know, to meet chicks and everything. And now it's like this generation, some just don't seem to care about meeting chicks, and some are just meeting them on apps and everything and are more afraid to approach in person.
That's
Whereas like
weird, right? That's
that
weird. It's
wasn't,
like there's some
it's
kind of
crazy.
there's a all of this stuff about attacking masculinity, like toxic masculinity or whatever the fuck. We build civilization gets built because dudes are trying to get laid. I mean, that's reductive, right?
Yeah.
But it is like the
Yep.
biological drive to go, send your DNA, your genetics into the as far into the future as possible is something that affects the lowest animal all the way up to us, right? And
Yeah, with like the
like,
highest quality mate.
yeah, exactly. So the highest quality mate, which means you as an individual, to if you want to get the highest quality mate, you have to be the highest quality person you can be, right? So, it manifests itself in a lot of weird ways, like putting a spoiler on your Honda or wearing too much cologne or whatever the fuck. But it also manifests itself in that's one of the primary motivators for men to go be successful and driven and motivated in life, right? Not to fuck, not just to fuck, but like to find a good mate and then produce offspring. And when you take that out of the equation, you can see the results. I mean, we have a bunch of timid dudes that don't, like, they can't make eye contact with you. They don't fucking stand up when people come by. They don't shake hands and stuff. It's a very bizarre world we're living in now.
It's funny, even some girls who are, you know, they're born in California, they're liberal, and they think they want a liberal man, and that's what they mainly date. But then they go out of nowhere on a date with a conservative man, and they'll literally make a whole video about how amazing it was, how the guy paid for everything, and he was confident, and he just gave his card, and he was just doing different things that are more masculine than what they're used to. And they're like, this is incredible. I didn't know these guys were like this. And I kind of thought I was an independent woman, but now I kind of don't want to be. And yeah.
Yeah. But that's just what a dude is. That's what a dude. Yeah. Like I've had these interactions as well where, you know, and it's, you know, complimentary. A woman's telling me blah, blah, blah. Like, it's really, I like that you're doing these things, but it's, I'm not used to it. I'm like, yeah, well, that's just like, that is the least you can do as a dude. Right. Like that's, nobody got together in a cabal in a room, in a dark room somewhere 3,000 years ago in Greece and said, you know what we're going to fucking do? Women are going to do this and men are going to do this. No, it just kind of fucking naturally happened that way. Right.
In every society.
Forever, right? Yeah. So it's like, yeah, maybe we should pay some attention to the fact that this exact part, this part of culture is almost identical, absent authoritarianism, of course, but this part of culture is almost identical independently all over the world, right? And at least four major cultures in the first 1,000 years of recorded history developed independently with the same general rules and stuff. Maybe it's because it makes fucking sense, right? Like an event somewhere and everybody's doing the activity one way and you start doing it the other way, some other way, you're a fucking retard, man. That just doesn't make any sense. Yeah. I don't know why we're so hell-bent on
reconstructing the norms.
Yeah, like what's the... And then reconstructing norms is a good way to put that because we come up with these words like... like cisgender. You mean normal? That's not a fucking thing,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah.
That's not a word. Cisgender is not a word. That's nonsense. Or like trads. People say trad all the time now. You mean traditional? You mean normal? You fucking dumb. Like that is ultra nefarious because it's trying to bring, I guess, extreme minority opinions up to the level of normal. You know what I mean? Like if 99% of people behave one way and you're like, well, actually I do this thing or whatever. And you're trying to make that the standard now. It's like, no, that's not how this works.
It's trying to conform society around the 1%.
Mm. Yeah. This doesn't make any sense. I mean, we wouldn't do that. If you run a business and you speak to only 1% of your audience, you will be out of business very soon. Right. And
that's why they say go woke, go broke.
Yeah. Yeah. And how you feel about, like, I don't like government at all. I don't think the federal government should even exist, frankly. But if we are going to have government, it certainly can't be focused on just the minority opinion. That's crazy.
Yeah. Make the military so it will just do sex changes for people that shouldn't even be in it.
Well, a new study came out last week, I think, and it says 77% of eligible males, that is, I think 17 to 32, would be ineligible for military service because of some kind of physical or mental condition. 77%. That seems like a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you look at society now, and I think it's 50 or 60% of the population is considered obese as well. And so that would take out, you know, a very significant part.
Not just obese, 38% are either diabetic or in pre-diabetes right now. 38% of Americans. That's insane. That's like
real.
And that's type 2, by the way. That's like, that is a behavior problem. That's the real 40% of the country.
It's the actual pandemic.
Yeah.
It's not like COVID was, if they would have put all the effort into just treating this, this obesity epidemic, it would have actually, you know, taking care of COVID way better than injecting people with something that just made them more prone to getting COVID.
Sure, yeah. I mean, well, look, there's no money in that, so.
Yeah.
What's the point? So let's go back to the military a little bit. When did you, what year did you go in? 2007?
Yeah, 07, okay. Went to boot camp. July, made it through boot camp. It was, you know, pretty boring, but got through. Me and I had a group of friends. We would be doing kind of workouts all night, trying to make sure we stayed in shape for Buds and everything. And then we all go out to Buds. Got there in October. I was in like PTRR for a while, and then started SEAL training in kind of early 2008, and yeah, that was good. I got, everything was going well, and then I got viral gastroenteritis Friday before Hell Week, and I was just throwing up for like several days, and so, but started feeling better Sunday, and that's when Hell Week was. I was like, all right, we're gonna do this. But from being super dehydrated, I ended up getting rhabdomyolysis, and it had never been diagnosed at the time. It's kind of like where your muscles break down so much, your blood becomes toxic with muscle waste. And Tuesday, I started becoming really weak, and it had never been diagnosed before because it affects people so much physically that mentally they'll quit on themselves. And I think tons of people probably had it before. They just quit when they got it. But I became the weakest person in the class. And after, like, you know, everyone else had pretty much quit. And an hour from Wednesday, I had gotten a few warnings, and they ended up performance dropping me. And I kind of didn't really accept that. I called my mentor, who really believed in me, thought I was really tough, and talked to another master chief there. Ended up going in. I didn't wear the utility uniform that you get in boot camp when you quit Buds or don't make it. You put that thing back on. I just put on my dress blues and wore that. I thought the utility uniform was kind of the quitter uniform, and they all went over to XDiv. So I had to go in and meet with the, I was the last person to not make it in that class. There was like three other people who got taken out that day as well. It's very front-loaded, people that don't make it through Hell Week. And I go in, I'm like, can I speak to you after? I was like, hey, I'm 23, I have a college degree. I didn't fail a single thing leading up to this. All the runs, all the swims, all the O courses. I just got sick before. You can talk to the doctors. I was in there I couldn't even drink water. I was taking IVs for all of Friday. And you have all these people who didn't pass a single run. It's like three or four that you do, single swim, single, and they got another chance to go back and get stronger and go into the next class. I don't need to go the fleet. I don't need to get stronger. I'm 23. I have a college degree. I just need to be healthy. And he's like, damn, you're the first person ever walk in here and want to do this again after getting dropped. And kind of through all that, it went back and forth a little bit because some instructors only saw me being really weak and sick, and they didn't know I had rhabdo. So they were like, oh, he doesn't deserve another chance. It went back and forth through a bunch of things. I had to meet with other kind of chiefs and had kind of people from the top call in on my behalf through my mentor and that other master chief I went, who was like a dev group legend. And so I got back into the next class. I went from never failing anything to failing every single evolution in the next class, because now I had rhabdo still. And then I, after falling out on boats, and then Monday came and I came in last place by 6 minutes on a run. I went to medical and like told the doctor, I'm like, hey, I need to find out what's wrong with me, or they're gonna kick me out of Buds and never let me come back. And I'm not looking for a way out. I just need to find out what's wrong. I was crushing this stuff in, you know, two classes before this. And he sent me over. He's like, sounds like you got this thing rhabdo. They drew my blood. My blood came back toxic. And I got some rest and then went back and started training all over again. But I went, all of a sudden I start buds again, a couple months later. I went through Indoc. They didn't even make me do Indoc. I did kind of just all these crazy workouts of Ty Woods, who, for listeners who don't know, it's kind of the hero of Benghazi, who 13 Hours is based off of,
Yeah,
did all
book.
these amazing workouts. And I was just so mentally tough from doing everything with my body not working. Now I'm just in like crazy shape and just kind of crushed everything after that.
This episode is brought to you by ghostbed.com/drinkitbros. Ghostbed. It's the best bed in the world. It's the most comfortable. Sheets, pillows, the whole thing. I've got them all, man. And, they wanted to extend their best possible offer to Drink It Bros. They've been with us for a very long time. So, this is the email they sent us. We want Drink It Bros to get the best offer, so I updated the code for 50% site wide. That's 50% site wide. Use the code Drinkin' Bros with no G, for 50% off site wide. Everything that you buy on this site is going to be 50% off. Again, they got the best pillows, sheets, mattresses. They got the mattress protector. If you're sloppy and spill things and you don't want to jack up your mattress, they have pretty much everything you need. They've got weighted blankets now. They've got the adjustable base, which we really like. I've got one in my home. So go to ghostbed.com/drinkitbros. Use the code drinkitbros for 50% off site wide. And don't forget about their pay-as-you-go plan. If you're with approved credit, you're going to be able to pay this thing off over the course of 3 to 5 years for 25 to 35 bucks a month. It's nothing. Go to ghostbed.com/drinkitbros today and use the code drinkitbros for 50% off. This episode is also brought to you by blackriflecoffee.com, the best coffee in the world. As a matter of fact, they won both the gold and bronze medal at the Golden Bean Awards this year for their exclusive coffee club entries in the elite category. So the best coffee on earth literally was Circus Bear by Black Rifle, one of their ECS. So I recommend that you go sign up for the Black Rifle Coffee Club. Use the code Citizen. You're going to get those points off. And you get all the benefits for being in the coffee club. You get the free shipping. You get access to all the partner deals. You get access to the exclusive coffee club. You get access to any new products that come out before anybody else does. It's a very large club that they have over there. And the coffees are premium. Every single one of them is good. You're going to get experience for you can do just the plain coffee club, and if you want your 2 bags of espresso or your 2 bags of silencer smooth or whatever it is you drink, you can get those 2 bags or 1 bag or whatever you want every month, or rather, you can use the ECS, the exclusive coffee club, and get access to some of the most premium coffees on the planet and kind of learn what it is that you like. You know what I mean? So then you can order those premium coffees from Black Rifle as well. So, and we all know they got the best branding, the best merch, and they're buddies. We're all friends here. We love Black Rifle. So go to blackriflecoffee.com, sign up for the coffee club, or buy something. Do whatever you want. Use the code Citizen. You're gonna get those points off. Yeah, Ty was he was a fucking animal, that dude. I've heard many, many stories about a legendary fucking beef castle, I guess you could call him. So this rhabdomyolysis is pretty fucking serious. I mean, you keep persisting through it, going back to buds with fucking rhabdo, which is a good way to get renal failure and die, right? Especially like you're at risk for renal failure just having it, but if you can't keep water down and you just stay dehydrated the whole time, it gets progressively worse, right?
So it's pretty much because I had VGE and was extremely dehydrated. I mean, there's several things that can lead to getting it. It's like being dehydrated, hypothermia, which we lost like 30 people at Steel Pier and 30 people on a buoy swim because it was so cold. All these people are quitting like crazy. I actually do really well in the cold, but with those things, it just kind of, and then I was getting these cramps, probably from that as well. I was getting cramps in my quads when we were running with the boat. It was a type of cramps where a football player will like fall and get carried off the field. And I just kind of bit down as hard as I could and stayed under the boat while running with these cramps. And I think kind of running through that is what like really led to getting the rhabdo then with the dehydration and hypothermia. And then yeah, after once I got that, I couldn't even stay under the boat. I was like running behind it, trying to keep up. It was the most kind of humiliating, worst time of my life. But there was no way I was going to quit. I thought of my grandpa fighting in Korea, being shot in the neck and shot in the chest, getting purple hearts, getting patched up, and just going back out and keep fighting. I would think of a situation of Marcus Luttrell fighting in Afghanistan with 100 Taliban surrounding you or whatever. I'm not going to give up. Even if it was a hopeless situation, I wasn't going to give up. I would think of the SEAL creed. I am never out of the fight. And I was like, I'll never be able to, say that if I quit on myself right now. And I had also spoken about being a SEAL since I was 16, and there was no way I was going to go back to my family and friends and all these people I love and say, oh yeah, that thing I wouldn't shut up about all these years, I quit on it. I would never be able to look myself in the mirror, many things. And I knew I belonged. I knew I was supposed to be there. I just had to get healthy. I didn't know what it
Sure,
was.
yeah.
Even when I went to the doctors, I didn't think that, and they took my labs. I was pretty hopeless at that moment. I didn't think it was going to actually come back what the doctor had said, because everything was going wrong at the time.
Well, I was going to ask you, what do you think it is about you that made you okay with eating so much shit to be where you want to be? You know what I mean? It's like, from my perspective, and this is one of the ways that I've found that build guardrails left and right limits, but also kind of an outline for self-improvement. It's like you look to people that you respect and you start to analyze what they believe, right? You read about their virtues and then you think about their mantras like the SEAL creed and stuff like that. And then you internalize them and they become part of your identity, right? You like this is the person that I want to be, and here is how I get there, right? I mean, it's kind of it's it sounds it seems complicated. A lot of people on their path towards self-improvement, whatever it happens to be, there's a really high barrier to entry because they don't know where to begin, right? I mean, despite the fact that there are like 250,000 self-help books at any given time, people still don't really know where to start because it is a very individualized process. It's kind of like your health and diet and stuff. It's very specific to you, right? And what motivates you is very specific to you. But there are some things that I think work strategically for pretty much everybody, and that's one of them. Like, this is what I want to be. I want to be this kind of man, and here are men that are like that, right? That I know that I can look to. Whether you're reading about Hemingway going off to join the military, 100 years ago, or whatever the fuck, or about Marcus Luttrell or somebody else. And it brings up the point, like, it's really important in a culture who we decide our heroes are. You know what I mean? Like, it used to be the as Tony Soprano used to like to say, the strong silent type, like Jimmy Stewart, a guy who was a very famous actor but continued to go back to war over and over again whenever the country needed him. You know what I mean? Or the baseball players from the 1940s who put their career aside, like Ted Williams put his career aside, Joe DiMaggio, to go fight in the war and stuff like that. Ted Williams did it twice. He flew sorties in Korea as well. It's like those were heroes back in the day. Now it's like Cardi B and dumb people, right? It's like, yeah, culture's
Kardashians.
breaking down, right? Of course it is, because our kids need somebody to look to that matter, that are doing the right thing, that are doing things that benefit society. And we constantly parade the dumbest motherfuckers in the world in front of them and pretend like that's aspirational somehow.
Yeah, like my heroes were actually going into the SEAL teams. It was Pat Tillman and Kyle Maynard. And crazy enough, I ended up meeting Kyle Maynard at a beach bar. And so Kyle was born without arms and legs, became a champion wrestler and jiu-jitsu fighter, and bear crawled Kilimanjaro, and is in the Wrestling Hall of Fame, fought MMA. I was just like, man, this guy's incredible. If I ever get blown up in a Iraq or wherever, I'm going to be real strong for my weight class, the same way Kyle is. And it was just pretty empowering doing that. I'm at a beach bar in San Diego with a bunch of my SEAL friends. All of a sudden, I see Kyle next to me. I'm like, Kyle, man, what's up? And we start talking, talked for several hours, became really good friends. He ended up moving in with me. We traveled all around the world together, went to like 20 plus countries. He ended up kind of helping me out with single life a lot and stuff, and helped each other with a lot of different things. And so that was kind of crazy. Just speaking about, who your heroes are and stuff. But I totally agree with all that. They put these people who are weak and have a horrible message, and you can see, how it's affecting society and everything. It's turned society into wanting to be heroes, into wanting to be victims, because it's a lot easier to be a victim and get a bunch of praise. And now it's a competition. It's a victim Olympics. Okay, I'm a woman. I have it harder than you. Well, I'm a black woman. I have it harder than you. Well, I'm a black trans woman. And it's like, it's who can create the most victimist identity that they can to try to be the, instead of being a hero, and actually being strong and helping people.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it changes it too. So when the hero is an actual hero, and the way we define hero as well is like service is the primary element of that, right? Every meaningful thing you do in your life is going to be in the service of other people, whether it's taking care of your family, your community, or something else, right? Or just in some stranger you fucking meet. And then culture shifts a little bit, and we start to lionize and heroize victim shitbags, right? And what a victim is constantly looking in the mirror. That's the most narcissistic person possible is somebody who's a perpetual victim, right? Because all they're ever thinking about is how life is affecting them, not how they can use what they've been given to go positively affect other people. So now we have a whole generation or two of people who are staring in the mirror wondering, when's it going to be my time? It's like, well, you don't not remember what JFK said? Like, do shit for your country and your country will become better. G.K. Chesterton said it as well. Men didn't love Rome because she was great. Rome was great because the men loved her, right? It's broken window theory on a very grand scale. If you do the hard work, if enough people engage in society enough, society is good. And if they don't, if they stare in the mirror too long, then society breaks down and gets fucked up. And it's happened in every culture, every empire, every republic, everything forever. It's always gone this way. And somehow we still are shocked. We're shocked when it happens. Like, oh, I can't believe this. It's like, can you believe this? Like, yeah, I can fucking believe it.
Yeah. And that leads to these people who already really, they're the most privileged people in society, millionaire actors, where everyone kisses the ground they walk on, like Jussie Smollett or whatever. He's black, gay, checks all the boxes, but he's got to go out and create a whole bigger victim thing than what even reality is. And what's he do? He hires a bunch of guys from Nigeria to pretend they're white, like MAGA guys. They like pretend he pretends to like get hung by them, and they're like yelling stuff. This is MAGA country, and it's just insane. He already checked all the boxes as a victim, but had to create a whole nother kind of victim scenario that didn't even exist, and he hired black guys to do it.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
Like,
that's
what
how it
the
goes
heck?
though. Like
Can't make this stuff up.
we're competitive. Nature makes us competitive because nature wants the best out of us, right? Like it's iron sharpens iron. That's how it works in all of nature, right? It's a meritocracy for the most part.
Yeah,
But then it
that's
becomes like
the
if you
destruction of society is getting rid of the meritocracy.
right. But well, I mean, we've traded out the meritocracy for another form of competition, and it's a race to the bottom. It's who can be the most pathetic, basically, right? So,
Yeah.
like, what did we expect the result of that was going to be? It's obvious what it was going to be. And then, the really bad part of it isn't just the underperformance, but it's that when critical parts of culture and society aren't taken care of, then nefarious actors will come into that power vacuum and start to take care of it for you. And that's where government comes in, right? I tell people this all the time. If you're really intent on conservatism or libertarianism, the best thing you can do is solve problems in your own community before the fucking government shows up trying to solve them. Because when the federal government shows up and there are no hands out begging for stuff, they don't have any power there. So they'll just move on to the next place, right? You insulate yourself. You make yourself more resilient by, you know, being more self-sufficient. It's always been that way. But somehow, you know, we've really gotten away from that. And, you know, there are a lot of things that feed into it. There's a big feedback loop on this. The victim part is bad. And then the, you know, nefarious actors that try to keep us in that victimhood mentality so they can take advantage of it are also bad.
Yeah, the nefarious factor is you just look at this unholy alliance, and it's government, of course. It's a lot of the technology companies, although, you know, we kind of got Twitter back and some things. We have pharma, we have the media. It's kind of crazy the way they were all in cahoots for several different things doing
Yeah, it's really stupid to, and it's, I guess I don't like to be super negative about it. People are like, oh, well, we're just, the empire is going to crumble and shit. It's like, maybe. I mean, if we let it, it will. Yeah, for sure. And that's what we've been doing so far. We've been letting life happen to us for the past, well, it's 75 years, maybe. In the West, especially. It's like Plato said, if you refuse to take part in your own governments, you're doomed to be ruled by fools, right? Like that's just how it is. And that's the purpose of this show, is that you can either bitch and moan about your rights and your plight in life and all that stuff, and you can sit around and wait for somebody to secure those rights for you, and you will be a subject under their rule. That is how it works. Or you can secure those rights yourself by performing the responsibilities required of you. And that's what makes you a citizen, right? Of a country. Yeah. It is a two-way street. If there's a social contract, and to be clear, there really isn't a social contract anymore. Maybe there never was. But if there is this broader idea of a social contract, there are services that you have to render as well, right? Like there's no partnership that works when only one side is pulling their weight. You know what I mean? So that it's really fucking stupid. But the good news is that, as is often the case, in the definition of the problem, we find the solution. It's just being active. You know what I mean? Finding ways to engage in civic society, finding ways to help other people, insulate our communities from outside threats and things like that. Like, these are all things that we're more than capable of doing. Not just military people. Anybody is capable of doing this stuff.
Yeah, there was some people in my community, in the SEAL community, who they kind of get harped on being, you know, quiet professional and these different things. And that's especially good when you're like a new guy. They don't want people going out talking about being a SEAL, even at bars or anything else. But some people kind of think that goes for the rest of your life. And I say it's like so important for the SEALs who have done a lot and experienced all these things, to Jocko's, Rob O'Neill, that if we aren't going out and putting a message into the world, it's going to be just a bunch of Hillary Clintons and Joe Bidens and a lot of the other people that you talked about that are going to be controlling the whole world and pushing the Kardashians, pushing culture all one direction. We, especially once guys are out and retired, it is so important for them to be out putting a message, helping drive culture back the right way.
Sure, yeah. And people have this idea of there's a bunch of tropes about veterans, the broken war fighter, the fucking the perpetual contractor who can't leave, the conservative pro-war person or whatever the fuck. It's like, I don't know a whole lot of dudes that have been in war that are super pro-war. And
yeah,
you guys and some of your buddies, we talked about it before, have leveraged a lot of your talent and skill. Like, so me and a lot of my buddies work in counter human trafficking, right? You guys, you, Rudy, and a bunch of other dudes, are part of this organization, Force Blue. Tell me about that and what it is you guys do specifically. Because you wouldn't necessarily think that a fucking operator would be out doing environmentalist work, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, really, we kind of put conservative in conservation. And, you know, so it's Force Blue is takes former combat divers, and we partner with the top scientists in the world from University of Miami, Florida Aquarium, Frost Center for Science, some of the other universities, and we do all types of maritime conservation, so ocean conservation. So a big part of that is the coral reef, and we built the 100 Yards of Hope, where we had a nursery, worked with the University of Miami scientist and these other partners, flipped it all, brought it out, and cemented it all to the ocean floor. And immediately as we're cementing it, fish are moving in and making it their new apartment home. It was one of the most beautiful things I've ever experienced in my life, basically creating ecosystems. These fish are then, you know, part for the next, turtles come in. It's a whole thing. We also go down to the Keys and save sick and diseased sea turtles down there. So we'll capture them, either jumping on top of them and pulling them in the boat if they're very large, or we'll capture them in nets. And some of them have fibril papillomavirus, which is this big, nasty tumors coming out of their body. Sometimes it's out of their eyes, out of their neck. Sometimes they can't mate because of it. And it can get into their internal organs as well. But we partner with the Turtle Hospital and turtle scientists, and we bring them in, and they get laser surgery from the doctors to get rehabilitated, and then they're released back into the wild. And it's amazing. It could be my grandchildren or great grandchildren that can see them in another, you know, 90 years.
Yeah.
And see the same turtle. They live really long, and so I really love doing all that work, and it's with a bunch of our best friends. It gives us some, and you know, helping, you know, with veteran suicide and everything. A lot of guys can feel they don't have a mission anymore. They don't have a community anymore. So it's just such a great way to continue to have both of them.
Yeah, sure. And it's, I mean, we're seeing improvement in that regard. I don't know about the turtles. I don't really track on that, but I know that over the last year or two, the Great Barrier Reef, which has had some problems over the last 50 years or so, the hard cover has actually increased 30%, or I'm sorry, it's increased 300% over the last like fucking 5 or 10 years, just from, you know, some of the stuff that, you know, scientists and organizations like yours have done for it. Like there's, Rudy was telling me about some kind of gel or some bullshit that scientists made that you were putting on the reef to heal it a little bit, I guess, or concrete other pieces to it or some bullshit. I don't remember exactly what he said. Can you tell me about that?
There's all kinds of things they actually can create, because there's different, some of it is, it's almost like an AIDS virus that was going on with the coral and spreading. And so we're designing in the labs actual more resilient coral, and also coral that is more resilient to temperature change, so that if it gets a really hot day, that it doesn't get bleached and die. So we're finding more resilient strains, planting that out there, planting it in nurseries, so we can grow, you know, massive amounts, go out, plant. We planted over 1,000 pieces in one day, made a whole football field of coral reef, had Miami Dolphins literally diving with us in partnership with the NFL and the Super Bowl, because it can't just be us doing it. There's got to be a message going out to the world, and the, you know, 70% people are into sports, so it's like a way to get the message out as well. The NFL is a great partner. They play it at their the NFL draft and other events that they have throughout the country. So it's a number of things that they're doing between the gel to protect it and the just more resilient strains to temperature and the diseases, and then planting all them to give it the best chance of survival.
Yeah, that's really cool. And then, it makes me think of people who do hunting conservation in the States. There's like Steve Rinella and people like that who really go out of their way to not just do it, but also to educate people. I mean, Rinella and Rogan are probably a as responsible for the increase in health amongst conservative men of any two people that exist right now. Just like getting meat, real meat, and fucking like working out the right way and stuff like that. And the point of that is like, you don't have to start a t-shirt co or security company or coffee company or podcast or any of the typical bro bet businesses to find your purpose again when you get out of the military, right? Like you don't feel like you're pigeonholed by those things. There are tons of different ways that you can go out and find stuff that you are maybe uniquely suited to perform, right? Where you can go out into the world and find that you can help improve your family, your community, and the world at large, right? There's so many different things. And I'm telling you, as a man, if you don't find something like that, if you're not working off a playbook to get to a very specific part, a place in life, then you will never be fulfilled or satisfied. The circumstances of your life may be good, but that can be even more problematic because you're not going to be everything around you will seem okay, but you're still fucking miserable and depressed because you don't you you know that you don't have a purpose, but you won't admit it to yourself. And that's when it gets really dangerous. Like if things are really good and you're still depressed, that's when things get really dangerous because that's when you start self-medicating, like, oh, I guess this is just as good as it gets. You know what I mean?
Well, a lot of times people are like that, and then they get the one or two things that happen. All of a sudden the wife wants a divorce, all of a sudden problem with the kids, or the kids get taken away. And then that's when a lot of the things, or lose a job at the same time. There's several people I know that it happened to. Some were just friends on social media and stuff that wore a single life. Never would have imagined, and out of nowhere, guys killed themselves.
I mean, it's like you've got to find that. And there's and I just got somebody into a program yesterday. They were having a lot of trouble, and I got them squared away with a program yesterday, last night actually. And I was just telling them, like, look, I can fucking get you into this thing. They can fucking help you, but you've got to do it. Like nobody can do this for you. You have to decide that you're gonna persist, right? You're gonna be resilient. Whatever life throws at you, you're just gonna fucking push through it. And then you have to fucking sit down and make a like come up with manageable fucking goals that you can fucking really reach. Start small, man. Just like, hey, I'm gonna fucking wake up at 7 every morning from now on instead of sleeping until 9 or whatever the fuck, right? Do small things. That's what, as much shit as I give them for it, that's what McRaven was talking about, making your bed. Like just
Definitely.
The small mechanical things that build left and right guardrails in your life are super important. So start small, and once you get good at that thing, it's like, well, you know what? I can actually do more. And you'll be surprised how quickly it goes, how quickly you just start fucking improving because we're not meant to sit around and think about how life sucks. That's what losers do. We're meant to do shit. You know what I mean? We're animals. We're meant to do shit.
It used to be really simple back in the day, where you would just be going out hunting every day,
Yeah.
or you didn't eat.
Just trying to
Like, it was
stay
very
alive is like
simple.
really good motivator, right?
And you're like, all right, I gotta feed my family, I gotta feed my friends. Very simple motivation. Nobody's killing themselves. Like, I guarantee it.
And then
Have you?
you take that same attitude, and it's like it isn't busy work. It's not work just to work. Like you should have a purpose behind it, but staying busy is a good thing, right? I mean, it really is. What's the phrase? idle hands are the devil's plaything, I think, is how it goes. Yeah.
What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
It's like, so these lessons you can learn at the lower level, improving your own life and your own level of discipline, then begin to permeate throughout the rest of your life. Your family becomes better taken care of and more satisfied and fulfilled and happier and safer. And then you bring this into your workplace. Like, you know, we've done at Black Rifle in here, it's been a big deal for us to be able to fucking do that shit, right? I mean, for our mental health, it's been a big deal for us to do something that we think matters again, and then have it be a business where we can actually make a living off of it, right? Like working the fields, basically, but in the modern age, I guess. And you're doing that with Sangha Life now. Tell me about how that, well, first of all, what it is and how that all started.
Yeah, so from doing jiu-jitsu and everything, I was really close with the Gracie family, went down to Rio de Janeiro and throughout Brazil several times with them. And I'd be at the beach hanging out, and I'm the only guy in board shorts. And I'm talking to a Brazilian girl and my friends. I think I'm like, oh, I think I really need to get some of these sungas. I see you get like better suntans and they like dry way faster. You come out of the water, you're not walking around in a soggy pair of shorts. And the girl's like, yeah, and they're just so sexy on men. And I'm like, all right.
And that was it.
I went, bought a bunch of them, started wearing them all over the world. And everybody would be like, the girls were always complimenting me on them. I wouldn't even have to like go talk to them. They'd come be like, oh, wow, I like your shorts. And sometimes guys would make fun of me for a second. And then they'd be like, hey, do you have any more Lou's? And so I'm like, all right, I kind of need to share this life hack with the rest of the US. And Sangha Life was born. And then I went to, actually me and Kyle Maynard kind of traveled around the world. The year I got out of the Navy, went to like 20 plus countries and created some cool content for the brand and everything there. I took him scuba diving at the Great Barrier Reef. I just kind of held his tank while I swam him around. And because he doesn't have like legs to fin or anything. Mm-hmm. And then we climbed the highest mountain there and just did a lot of really epic stuff. Sailed around the Adriatic Sea of Croatia, carried him on my back all the way up to where Jesus was crucified, and all kinds of great things. And then went to start my MBA at UCLA, and it ended up being my master's thesis there as well, and had other MBA students work on it for a grade. And it was kind of my goal going to UCLA to be able to do that. And then just kind of took all the resources and did several accelerators there, and was just really helped me just like scale and grow the brand and everything.
So you started out with just the shorts, right? And now there's a whole wide array of products.
Yeah, it was just the sungas at first, and then all right, I need to make, because everybody doesn't wear those, maybe I'll. And silkies are real big in the veteran community and ranger panties. So basically took the same designs and put them on the silkies, then made the board shorts. And a lot of the girls were like, oh, I want to wear that. So I made bikinis and workout shorts for women and started making joggers and t-shirts and all kinds of stuff. Made different kind of wibby hoodie jackets as well that were like peacock on the inside and camo on the outside. And we say, if you're going to peacock, do it like a patriot.
Yeah. So yeah. Somebody just did one. I don't remember who it was, but somebody just made a version. It's kind of a mix between Sangha Life and the old urban camo, but it's all dicks. Have you seen this?
Oh, no way.
It's a meme that's been, so they actually made the design and they're putting it on stuff. Like somebody, one of my buddies got it Cerakoted on one of his rifles the other day. But it's basically a meme that's floating around. It's like, look, the Navy's got new camo and it's just all dicks on it, which would make sense, right?
That's awesome. Totally.
So how's the growth of the business been over the past, I mean, whatever, however many years it's been, what, 8 year, almost 8 years now since you guys started.
Yeah, you know, it was going really well, and then kind of the, you know, I had almost like a million in sales, like a year and a half ago, or I guess, yeah, a year ago, had a million in sales, but then there was other challenges from kind of the iOS update and things, and I was focused, I kind of started launching some other companies and was very focused on that. I've been building it's like a 9 acre outdoor range in West Palm area. Rob O'Neill's a partner on that. Kaj Larson, Drew Platis, who's an Army Ranger. And it's kind of like a country club for tactical shooting and training. We have over 100 members already, and it opens on February 1st. So if you're ever in Florida, I'll take you out shooting there. And we goes out to 300 meters, and that's really unheard of in South Florida because land's really hard to come by. And we have 150 meter range, 35 meter pistol rifle range. Jake Paul just came out, like landed a helicopter, took him shooting. He was actually really good, followed instruction really well.
Did Jeff come with him? Jeff Wu, you know, Jeffrey? He's a good guy. They own a capital investment firm together.
Like so a VC. They have a VC. Yeah. I met him. I went to his last, he gave me kind of tickets for his last fight. And then we kind of did a little after party at his house. So Wu was there.
Yeah. He's the man. He's super smart, man. He lives in Miami. He's not too far away from there.
Oh yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
I think he's still there. You said the range is in Palm Beach. Like up that way. Just like north of Boca a little bit.
Yep. It's basically 30 to 45 minutes from Jupiter, Boca, and Palm Beach.
I need to hook you up. Well, you know, the Killcliff Fight Club is there too. You know Killcliff?
Yeah, I know.
So they have a fight. They have a fight gym up there now. Yeah. They have a fight, fight gym that, like Mickey Gall and a bunch of other people train up there.
I actually didn't know that.
I'll DM you the info so you can find it. It's not too far. Do you live there? Do you live in Palm Beach?
I live in Fort Lauderdale.
Oh, okay, actually. Yeah. So it's like probably, if you're in Fort Lauderdale, it's probably like 45 minutes from you, I think. Something like that. It's not bad. Anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. I'm glad it's going well. It's not always easy to, the fake pandemic bullshit was kind of rough on some businesses. But online businesses did okay, I guess.
Mine started doing better, and then kind of iOS update and several other things. I think just the economy as well. I know a lot of people who have online businesses who it's just been 2023 was a tougher year for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. Yeah, rates are up. Although they're starting to come down now, so we'll see how it goes. It's an election year, so they have to make it look good, you know. We'll see how that
goes. I did some other things to try to, you know, supplement it. I did this crazy TV show in Korea. Have you heard of the Iron Squad at all?
No, what is that?
So
I mean, Asian game shows are fucking insane. So I'm looking forward to hearing about this.
Yeah, so went to Korea, filmed the whole month of July. It was me and two SEALs, Kaj Larson, Ian Cinelli, and a Green Beret, Will Ravello. And we did this show, and it was Korea's like top TV show. It was all these military challenges, everything from mud wrestling in a pit to doing a sniper stress course, running with boats on heads, and all these crazy things. So first day I get there, they're like, oh, you're gonna get plenty of time to shoot all this stuff, try the different guns that we have. And that didn't happen. It was like right into a gauntlet, and we did this mud wrestling thing. And I'm like a good, you know, really good wrestler, jiu-jitsu guy, but I'm like lining up, and I'm like, oh, my feet are kind of stuck in this mud. And it's like right the guy goes for a single leg. I fall back, hit the sandbag, break my rib, and then my friend gets shoved out. It was 2-on-2. All of a sudden, I have two guys on me, and my rib is like sticking out. I can feel it like sticking, like popping out, not through the skin, but just out of my rib, freaking going. I'm getting like drowned for like a minute in there. We lose in like embarrassing fashion. I'm like, what the heck was that? And then, you know, kind of heal. like heal up a little bit. But then we're sleeping on the floor as well. It's like Korean culture. I never slept on the floor in my life, and now I'm doing it with a broken rib. Got like 2 hours of sleep. On to the next competition. Now it's like both they do some other stuff. We're eliminated from the first thing, which is going to choose the winner of it. We'll get to choose who they're going to go against. So they choose us because we're they thought we were weak because we did really bad in this thing. It was the Korean SEALs that won it. They got the Special Forces. They got 707s, which is like their CAG or Delta Force and some other units. Five Korean units, one American team. And then we go into the next one, and it's boats on heads into a paddle out, take down a ship, dive down like 15, paddle out more, dive down, get a key, come back, get this box, which is supposed to be a bomb, disarm it. It's like 200 pounds. You got to put it up, carry it up this ladder, and to get out of the sailboat, back onto the IBS, paddle in and run 300 meters up the boat with that. So
They're not going to
we
beat
do
you.
this
They're not going to
thing.
beat you with that one. That's like your bread and butter.
No, we and they chose us. They were the top team. They choose us, and I Kosh hadn't done boats on head since 2001, since like 9/11. He was doing boats on head. I hadn't done it since 08. Ian was like 2010, and a lot of these guys are like 25, 28, just got out like 2 months ago. And yeah, but we dominate them in this. And they're like, damn. And so we literally win that. The team that had gone through and won the challenges beat us in the mud pit. They had to go and do a death match. Didn't get to sleep all weekend on top of it. We went back, did like the Korean spa and sauna, and it was just like ongoing, all these other challenges. Ended up becoming really close with all the Koreans. I learned so much about the Korean War, which was, this was I when my rib was hurt and all this stuff, I just thought of my grandpa who had been, once again, had fought there for the full year of 1951. Had to retreat one time because he was fighting a million Chinese and had been shot in the chest, shot in the neck, or shrapnel through his neck from a mortar. Had many of his friends die right in front of him. He was just a 20-year-old kid. Didn't even tell his parents he was wounded because he didn't want them to worry about him. And he just went back out and kept fighting. So I'm like, I've had a lot more life experience, and I'm doing this with a bunch of my friends. I hurt my rib. Like, don't even let it bother you know?
I mean,
So,
it's not Squid Game, right? You're not gonna die at the end probably, so it'll be fine.
So ended up having like an amazing time there. I mean, it was tough. It was kind of like, SEAL training again, but made me feel really kind of good getting back into all of that. And I literally like come back from that. Me and Kaj have been really good friends, but we hadn't got to really operate like that. So that was kind of really fun to get to do all these kind of mock missions, taking down ships, taking down giant, giant factory, like manufacturing factory plants, running through all these things.
That
And
sounds like it would be a dope TV show in America, just like former operators teaming up and doing like just running courses and shit like that for points, for money or whatever, right? That would be fucking dope as shit. Why has nobody done? I mean, the all we do is like, and not that I don't like Rudy's on a show, Special Forces, that where they put regular dicks through like selection or whatever the fuck. But we've never done a show where, no, that's not true. There was one where they paired up operators with civilians and they ran courses together because Chris Kyle did it, I remember. But I don't,
Oh,
that's the
really?
only time I've ever seen it. Yeah, before he died, he was on that show.
Wow.
Actually, he
I
was
didn't even
teamed
know
up.
that.
I think he was teamed up with Jeff Palin, Sarah Palin's ex,
Oh, no
for
way.
that. Yeah, it was really funny.
Oh, my gosh.
But that seems like, that's like watching sports to me. Like watching dudes go through shoot houses and stuff. I'm watching it like I'm
Oh
watching
yeah.
football.
Totally. That it was like that. People went crazy. People went crazy for it, and we became like one of the most probably the most popular team as well. All the Koreans were like rooting for us to win. It was hysterical.
Like Rocky IV, right? Where the Russians turn on Boris, whatever the fuck his name. What was his name? I don't remember his name. Dolph, Drago. Dolph Lundgren. Yeah, that's funny. I where is that? Is there? Can I watch this somewhere?
Yeah, I can send you.
Yeah, send it also, to me. I'll put it in the show notes.
I'll send
notes.
It to you. I have a whole thing, but it's also on Dailymotion. I have like a login that they gave me to be able to watch it on Korean TV. It was like number one on Korean Netflix, but you'd have to like change your VPN probably to watch it.
Oh, that's easy. We got ExpressVPN over here. It's fine.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Well, what else do you have coming up? So you and Sangha Life, what's going on in the 2024 period?
Yeah, just going to be doing a bunch of new drops and everything. And actually kind of, so it was funny. I came back from that and then ended up joining the special ops unit of the Florida State Guard that DeSantis had. So literally all my like best friends in Florida joined this group. And we like got to do a bunch of shooting, fast roping from helicopters, running around on boats. And then that way we're all kind of empowered through the governor. If something crazy happens with a hurricane or whatever, we have all like, you know, millions of dollars of training. We can go out and actually make a difference and help people in our own state, not going, you know, over to mess up at, like, you know, the withdrawal with Afghanistan or something else, you know, with you know, whoever the president, if you have a president that doesn't know what they're doing, you're not subject to them.
Yeah.
Just doing it in your own state is pretty awesome for this stage of my life right now.
Yeah. That's dope. Good, man. Well, look, tell everybody before we get out of here, tell everybody where they can find you, where they can find your companies.
Yeah. So you can find me Instagram, Jeff Gum, and, Sunga Life, SUNGA.LIFE, and then just sungalife.com as well for the website. Got all the best kind of, it's kind of like the Navy SEAL, Lululemon, or got swimwear, athleisure, workout stuff. We got the Pocket Silkies, which have little kind of things you can put your phone in and everything. So just, probably the most comfortable shorts out there.
What about hair care products? I mean, I expect a Navy SEAL organization to have some hair care products.
Yeah, just got, you know, the grooming clay goes right there.
Oh, do you really? I was just fucking with you.
not my own grooming clay, but.
All right, cool. Yeah, you guys go check out Sangha Life. Go check out Jeff Gum. And thanks for coming on, man. I really appreciate it. It's been a good conversation.
Definitely. It was great talking. And I was hoping to get to do it in person with you, but I think you're going out to SHOT Show or something.
Yeah.
The dates got changed a bit.
Yep.
But I'd love to link up if you're in Florida, or I go through Austin sometimes as well.
Yeah, hit me up. I mean, we go through Florida a lot too. We have a big our booze company sells a lot of stuff down there, especially in that area. So
going to any UCF games, I go to almost every game, every home game.
So one of our head engineer is a UCF graduate, so we usually once a year we go to a game there. So I'll let you know.
I think I saw you at one of the first ones. Last year.
Yeah, we were there. I think it was the opening weekend. It was September 9th, I think. Was
awesome.
It was cool. Yeah, I'll hit you when we come there. Thanks for coming on today, man. I really appreciate it.
Definitely.
And thank you all for listening.
Talking to you, Dan.
Yeah, have thanks. A great one. Thank you all for listening. This has been Citizen.
What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere, visit hyland.com.